The Temple of Hathor had been excavated out of the rocky hillside above the river in the reign of Pharaoh Sehetawi, hundreds of years previously, but had been added to by every pharaoh since then. The priestesses were a rich, influential sisterhood who had contrived somehow to survive during the long civil wars between the kingdoms, and even to prosper in difficult times. Dressed in their yellow robes, they were gathered in the courtyard of the temple, between the two massive statues of the goddess. One of these depicted Hathor as the piebald cow with golden horns, and the other was her human manifestation, the tall, beautiful lady wearing the crown of horns and the gold sun disc on her head. The priestesses chanted and rattled the sistrum as the suite of Pharaoh Nefertiti filed into the courtyard from the eastern wing, while King Apepi's courtiers entered through the western colonnade. The order of arrival at the conference had been a matter of such heated debate that the negotiations had almost broken down before they'd begun. The first arrival would have the prestige of the incumbent in the position of power, while the second arrival would appear as the supplicant begging for peace. Neither side had been willing to forego the advantage. It was Taita who had suggested the expedient of a simultaneous arrival. He had also tactfully settled the equally vexing question of the regalia to be won by the two protagonists. Both would eschew the double crown. Apepe would wear the red Deshret crown of Lower Egypt, while Nefertiti would confine himself to the white Hedjet crown of Upper Egypt. The entourages of both rulers packed the spacious courtyard, their ranks facing each other unsmiling and grim. Only a few paces separated them physically, but the bitterness and hatred of 60 years' strife formed a mighty barrier between them. The hostile silence was shattered by a rolling fanfare of ram's horns and the thunder of bronze gongs. This was the signal for the royal parties to emerge from the opposite wings of the temple. Lord Naja and Pharaoh Nefertiti paced out solemnly and took their places on the high-backed thrones, while the two princesses, Heseret and Merikara, followed them meekly and took their seats at the foot of Naja's throne, for they were his betrothed. Both girls were so heavily made up that their faces were as expressionless as that of the statue of Hathor, in whose shadow they sat. At the same time, the Hyksosian royal family emerged from the opposing wing of the temple. Apepe led them, an impressive, warlike figure in full battle armour. He glared across the courtyard at the boy Pharaoh. 8 of his sons followed him. Only Kayan, the youngest, had not recovered sufficiently from the plague to make the river journey. Like their father, they were armed and armoured, and strutted and posed with the same bravado. A formidable coterie of bloodthirsty ruffians, Taita thought, as he surveyed them from where he stood close to Nefer's throne. Apepe had brought only one of his many daughters with him. Like a desert rose in a thicket of spiny cactus, the contrast to her brothers made Mintaka's beauty shine out. She picked out Taita's tall, lank figure and silver hair in the crowd opposite, and her face lit in a smile so radiant that it seemed for a moment that the sun had burst through the awnings stretched over the courtyard. None of the Egyptians had ever laid eyes on her before, and there was a subdued rustle and murmur through their ranks. They had been unprepared for her. The myth was that all Hyksosian women were as heavily built as their menfolk, and twice as ugly. Pharaoh Nefertiti leant forward slightly, and despite the solemnity of the occasion, tugged at his earlobe under the bottle-shaped white crown. It was a habit Taita had tried to break, and Nefer only did it when he was intensely interested in something, or when he was distracted. Taita had not seen Nefer for over 2 months. Naja had kept them separated since his return from Apepe's headquarters at Bubasti. Yet he was so familiar with the boy, so attuned to his mind, that he could still read his thoughts with ease. He sensed that Nefer was in a ferment of elation and excitement, as intense as if he'd just spotted a gazelle moving within arrow range, or was about to mount an unbroken colt, or had launched a hawk at a heron and was watching it begin its stoop. Taita had never known him react like this to the presence of a member of the opposite sex. Nefer had always looked upon all females, including his sisters, with a regal disdain. However, it was less than a year since he'd been launched onto the troubled waters of puberty, and most of that time he'd been sequestered with Taita in the wilderness of Jebel Nagara, where there had been nothing to rivet his attention in the way that Mintaka was now doing. Taita felt smug at what he'd achieved with so little effort. It would have complicated all his plans and enhanced the danger in which they found themselves if Nefer had taken a violent dislike to the Hyksosian girl. If the two married, Nefer would be son-in-law of a Pepe and come under his protection. Even Najah must pause before giving offence to someone so powerful and dangerous. Mintaka might unwittingly save Nefer from the regent's machinations and ambitions. That, at least, was Taita's intention in fostering the union. During the short time they had nursed and cared for her brother, Taita and Mintaka had formed a firm friendship. Now Taita nodded almost imperceptibly and returned her smile. Then Mintaka's gaze moved past him. She looked with interest at the noble Egyptian women opposite her. She had heard much about them, but these were the first she'd seen. Swiftly, she singled out Heseret. With sure feminine instinct, she recognized someone as attractive as herself and a possible future rival. Heseret reacted to her in exactly the same way, and they exchanged a brief but haughty and mutually hostile glance. Then Mintaka raised her eyes to the impressive figure of Lord Najah and stared at him with fascination. He was such a splendid sight, so different from her own father and brothers. He shone with gold and precious stones, and his linen was dazzling in its purity. She could smell his perfume across the distance that separated them like a field of wild flowers. His face was a mask of makeup, his skin almost luminous, and his eyes outlined and enhanced with kohl. Yet she thought that his was the fatal beauty of a snake or a poisonous insect. She shivered and turned her eyes to the figure on the throne beside the regent. Vera Nefosetti was staring at her with such intensity that she caught her breath. His eyes were so green. That was the first thing that struck her, and she wanted to look away, but found that she could not. Instead, she started to blush. Pharaoh Nefesetti looked so dignified and divine under the white crown, and with the false goatee beard on his chin, that she felt flustered. Then suddenly Pharaoh gave her a warm and conspiratorial smile. Instantly his face was boyish and appealing, and unaccountably her breath came faster and she blushed deeper. With an effort she tore away her eyes and studied the cow statue of the goddess Hathor with great attention. It took her some time to bring herself under control, and by that time Lord Najah, the regent of Upper Egypt, was speaking. In measured tones he greeted Apepe, diplomatically referring to him as King of the Hyksos, but avoiding any reference to his claims to Egyptian territory. Mintaka watched his lips intensely, but she was aware of Nefer's eyes on her, and determined not to look at him. Lord Najah's voice was sonorous and boring, and at last she could hold out no longer. She sneaked a quick sideways glance at Nefer, intending to look away again immediately, but his eyes were still fastened on her. They glinted with silent laughter and fascinated her. Hers was not a timid nature, but this time her smile was shy and hesitant, and she felt her colour rise again. She dropped her eyes and looked at her hands in her lap, twisting her fingers together until she realised that she was fidgeting, and stopped herself. She kept her hands still, but now she was irritated with Nefer for having ruffled her calm. He's only a precious Egyptian fop, Any one of my brothers is more of a man, and twice as handsome. He's only trying to make me look a fool by staring at me in that boorish way. I will not look at him again. I will ignore him completely, she decided. And her resolve lasted until Lord Narja stopped speaking and her father rose to answer him. She shot Nefer another quick look from under her thick, dark lashes. He was gazing at her father, but the moment her glance touched his face, his eyes swiveled to her. She tried to make her expression severe and forbidding, but as soon as he smiled, her lips twitched in sympathy. "He really is as handsome as some of my brothers," she conceded, then took another quick peek. "Or perhaps as any of them." She looked back at her lap and thought about it. Then she took another peep, just to make certain. "Perhaps even more handsome than any of them. Even Ruger." Immediately she felt that she'd betrayed her eldest brother and qualified her opinion. But in a different way, of course. She glanced sideways at Ruger. With his beribboned beard and dark brow, he was all warrior. "Ruger is a fine-looking man," she thought loyally. In the ranks opposite, Taita did not seem to be watching her, but he missed not a single nuance of the surreptitious exchanges between Nefer and Mintaka. He saw more than that. Lord Trok, Narja's cousin, was standing close beside Apepi's throne, almost within arm's reach of Mintaka. His arms were folded over his chest, and he wore embossed wristlets of solid gold. Over one shoulder was slung a heavy, recurved bow, over the other an arrow quiver covered in gold leaf. Around his neck were the gold chains of valour and praise. The Hyksos had adopted Egyptian military honours and decorations as well as their beliefs and customs. Trok was watching the Hyksosian princess with an unfathomable expression. There was another brief exchange of glances between Mintaka and Nefer, which Trok followed with his dark, brooding gaze. Taita could sense his anger and jealousy. It was as though the hot and oppressive cloud of the Khamsin, the terrible Saharan sandstorm, was building up on the desert horizon. I had not foreseen this. Is Trok's interest in Mintaka romantic or political? He wondered. Does he lust for her, or see her merely as a staircase to power? In either case it is dangerous, and something else we must take into account. The speeches of greeting were coming to an end, and nothing of significance had been said. Negotiation of the truce would begin in secret session the next day. Both sides were rising from their thrones and exchanging bows and salutations, and the gongs began to beat and the ram's horns to sound again as they withdrew. Taita took one last look at the Hyksosian ranks. Apepi and his sons disappeared through a gateway guarded by tall granite pillars, topped with the twin cow heads of the goddess. With a final backward look, Mintaka followed her father and brothers. Lord Trok followed her closely, and also shot a last glance at Farah Nefer Seti over his shoulder. Then he, too, strode out between the pillars. As he did so, the arrows in his quiver rattled softly, and their coloured fletchings caught Taita's eye. Unlike the workaday leather war quiver, with its stopper on to prevent the arrows spilling out, this ceremonial one was covered in gold leaf, and the barrel end was open, so that the fletched tips of the arrows protruded above its shoulder. The feathers were red and green. And something evil stirred in Taita's memory. Trok marched away through the gateway, leaving Taita gazing after him.